It is Thursday, May 19th, 2022, and I call this meeting of the Higher Education, the House File 3872 Conference Committee to order. The CLA will take the roll, starting with the Senate.
Chair Tomasoni. Senator Rarick.
Present.
Senator Jasinski. Senator Housley.
Here.
Senator Clausen.
Present.
Chair Bernardi.
Present.
Representative Christensen.
Present.
Representative Keeler.
Present.
Representative Cleborne.
Cleborne, present.
Representative O'Neill.
Present.
Madam Chair, we have 5 members of the House present and 3 members of the Senate present.
Thank you. We will now do the walkthrough of the bill, and we will be voting on the House and Senate Chair's agreement on House File 3872. Our nonpartisan staff will take the lead and walk us through the agreed upon language. And afterwards, we will hear amendments to the DE and vote on passage of the DE amendment before final voting on the conference report. With us to walk through the DE, we have Nathan Hopkins from House Research, Kathy Schill from House Fiscal, Joan White from Senate Counsel, and Hannah Grunewald from Senate Fiscal. Ms. Grunewald, you will be first up. Please proceed.
Hello, Madam Chair and members. So I'll be working off of the spreadsheet, which should have been provided to you in the upper, just to make sure we're all looking at the same spreadsheet. In the upper right-hand corner, I'll be looking off of the spreadsheet dated 5/19, printed at 10:04 a.m. So just to orient you to the spreadsheet a little bit, the columns C and D show the original House position for just the biennial totals, and then columns E and F show the Senate original position for the biennial totals only. And then columns G and H show the agreement that the chairs came to, and I'll be walking through each agency, and I'll only be referring to the chairs agreement, but if any questions come up on the House or Senate original positions, just let me know and we can go back and look at each line item. But I'll begin by just saying that the overall spending here in fiscal year 22-23 is a $20 million increase. And then in the tails for fiscal year 24-25 is a $26 million increase. And then for the Office of Higher Education, a total increase in fiscal year 23 of $8.825 million, and in the tails, a total of $14.478 million. For Minnesota State, a total increase of $8.175 million in fiscal year 23, and in the tails, a total of $9.5 million for Minnesota State. And then for University of Minnesota, $3 million increase fiscal year 23, and then an overall $2 million increase in fiscal year 24-25. So that just shows the overall totals of each area. I'll move on to now talking about the Office of Higher Education and each change item here. So beginning with line 20, the Student Parent Center grant in this bill will have $750,000 appropriated in fiscal year 23, and then $750,000 each year thereafter. And on line 21, $3 million is dedicated to operating expenses of tribal colleges, and that's an ongoing $3 million each year. On line 22, the state grant modifications, believe a 1% LME, the effects of that show up in the tails of $2.4 million each year. And I believe in fiscal year 23, the state grant surplus covers the LME changes in fiscal year 23. Then on line 23, for the underrepresented student teacher grant, there's a $500,000 appropriation in fiscal year 23, and then a $500,000 ongoing each year after that. Jumping down to line 26, Hunger Free Campus Expansion has a $75,000 increase in fiscal year 23, and that increase of $75,000 is ongoing each year. Then on line 28, the Inclusive Higher Education Grants receives $500,000 in fiscal year 23 and $500,000 each year thereafter. And then jumping down to line 36 and 37, this shows the Learn to Earn Coalition, a total of $1 million there, $980,000 going to OHE and $20,000 going to DEED. So I'll flip to the next page. On line 43, the last item for OHE here is $3 million in fiscal year 23 for the continuing CNA training program. And that's a one-time appropriation. And that rounds out the OHE total for $8.8 million in fiscal year 23, and then $14.4 in the tails. And I'm just checking if Ms. Schill is on. I know she might be tied up with another committee. If not, I can keep moving on, unless there are any questions. Oh, Madam Chair, you're muted, I believe.
Thank you. Member, are there any questions before we move on? Okay, please proceed, Ms. Grunewald.
Great, so moving on to Minnesota State, which begins on line 48 with campus responsiveness and stabilization plus an O&M increase. So for this, for fiscal year 23, there's a $3.1 million increase and then an ongoing $1 million increase each year for O&M. Then on line 49, it's $4.25 million increase for workforce development scholarships. And in the tails, that's a $3.75 million increase each year. Then moving down to line 54, the Allied Health Program receives a one-time funding of $800,000 in fiscal year 23. And I believe we'll be touching on this in more detail as we touch on the policy, but I'll just note that for now. So those three items for Minnesota State total $8.1 million for fiscal year 23, and then in the tails, $4.76 million each year. Then for University of Minnesota, there's two items here. First, line 63 for NRRI, it's a $2 million increase for the institute, and this is just increase to base funding. And then on line 66, there's a $1 million appropriation each year ongoing for the University of Minnesota's Promise Scholarships, bringing the total of University of Minnesota to $3 million in fiscal year 23 and an ongoing amount of $1 million each year thereafter. And there isn't any appropriations for the Department of Education. That's just showing up because of the previous offers or the previous positions. On the last page, there's just some extra detail here about the forecasted base, the changes, and the percent difference there, as well as transfers, which I can go into more detail if you'd like, but otherwise I'll end it there and pause for any questions. Otherwise I can move it on to Ms. White and Mr. Hopkins for policy.
Okay, members, are there any questions? Okay, seeing none, Mr. Hopkins, would you please proceed?
Madam Chair, actually, I'm going to go through the first part of Article 2, Joan White with Senate Counsel.
Please proceed, Ms. White.
Article 2, Higher Ed Policy. I'm going to do a very high-level overview. If you have questions, just let me know. Section 1 makes private nonprofit post-secondary institutions eligible for hunger-free designation and grants to meet and maintain that designation. Sections 2 and 3 require an affirmative consent standard in post-secondary institutions' sexual harassment and sexual violence policies. And Section 3 requires institutions to train students on the new affirmative consent standard. Sections 4 and 5 establish the Inclusive Higher Education Technical Center and Inclusive Higher Education Grants, respectively. And this is a pilot project to expire on October 1st of 2027. Section 6 increases the living and miscellaneous expenses from 109% to 110% of the federal poverty guidelines. Section 7 amends the state grant program to clarify institutions that have the responsibility to provide certain data to OHE. Section 8 establishes the Student Parent Support Initiative, which is a grant program to assist students who are parents or expectant parents. Section 9 amends the self-refi section of law to clarify institutions that must provide certain data to OHE. Section 10 modifies private career school exemptions by clarifying the types of schools and programs that are exempt from the requirements imposed on private career schools. Section 11 amends concurrent enrollment grant awards for schools that are expanding concurrent enrollment. Section 12 adds requirements for the governor's consideration in making appointments to the Board of Trustees of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. Section 13 requires a college or university to determine whether an individual's performance on a standardized test exempts that individual from developmental courses. Section 14 prohibits a college or university from placing an individual in a developmental course based solely on the testing process. Section 15 expands the programs of study under the Workforce Development Scholarship Program to include three new areas: construction, law enforcement, and social work. Section 16 modifies the Permanent University Fund by doubling the amount that can be allocated to NRRI. This bill also modifies the fund for mining-related degree program by allowing more than one program to receive funding. And it increases the maximum scholarship for students attending those programs and clarifies that the scholarships are for Minnesota students. And I think Mr. Hopkins will be doing the remainder of this article.
Thank you very much. Mr. Hopkins, please proceed.
Madam Chair and committee members, this is Nathan Hopkins with House Research. Section 17, the next section, begins on page 27 of the DE amendment. These next few sections will deal with the University of Minnesota's Board of Regents. Section 17 concerns congressional districts on the board and how redistricting and reapportionment of congressional districts will affect the election of members to the board. Section 18, also on page 27, this concerns the Regent Candidate Advisory Council. It changes the composition of the RCAC. Since the conference committee last heard this provision, it was changed to reduce the RCAC from 25 to 20 members, 5 House appointees, 5 Senate appointees, 5 current faculty members at the university, 1 from each campus, and the 5 student body presidents or designees thereof. The various ethnic councils were removed. On section 19, which is on page 28 of the DE, this is concerning the Joint Legislative Committee for Regent nomination. It permits the Joint Legislative Committee to nominate up to 2 candidates for each vacancy on the board rather than just 1. The prohibition on floor nominations has been removed. Section 20, beginning on page 29 of the DE, this is regarding the appropriation grant to Owatonna Learn to Earn Coalition. This requires a report from that organization on the activities funded by that appropriation. Section 21, this is the Allied Health Technician Scholarship Program. It establishes a new program to provide scholarships in the amount of $2,500 to students entering programs in specified health technician fields, and those health technician fields are specified on page 30, lines 3 to 7. The next section, section 22, this is a request to the Board of Regents to amend their policies to allow a compensated university employee to serve as a regent. That's helpful should the legislature choose to elect a faculty member or university employee as a regent. Currently, the board's policies prohibit a compensated employee from serving as a regent. Section 23 on page 31, this is a revisor instruction instructing the revisor to substitute the term developmental for remedial when it refers to remedial education courses at post-secondary institutions. Section 24 is two different repealers. The first paragraph A there on page 31, this repeals a defunct trustee candidate advisory council that screened candidates for the governor who is charged with appointing members to the University of the Minnesota State College and University Board of Trustees. The second repealer repeals a part in the Minnesota rules, the underlying statute for which has been repealed. Madam Chair, I can stop there for any questions on Article 2, or I can move on to Articles 3 and 4.
Let's pause here for a moment and ask, do the members have any questions regarding this article? Seeing none, please proceed, Mr. Hopkins.
Madam Chair and members, Nathan Hopkins from House Research. Articles 3 and 4 address the expansion of the Higher Education Facilities Authority. These articles empower the authority to provide conduit capital financing to nonprofit health organizations, as well as to institutions of higher education. The two things that I would want to point out that have changed since the committee last heard this, on page 40 of the DE, section 16 of Article 3, a new paragraph has been inserted requiring the authority to obtain permission before funding a healthcare organization in a city or town with a population of more than 100,000 people. So that would be Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Rochester. So permission must be obtained from the city. And I'd also like to point out on section 25 of this article, page 45 of the DE, the revisor instruction, if you look on lines 14 through 16 of page 45, the revisor statute is charged with changing the name of the Facilities Authority to the Minnesota Health and Higher Education Facilities Authority, wherever it appears in statute. Lastly, Article 4 is just some conforming amendments related to this change to the Facilities Authority. Madam Chair, that concludes the walkthrough of the bill.
Thank you very much. Members, are there any questions? I do not see any questions. I know Representative Cleburne brought up something to me earlier, and if she would just, I think it would be good to have it on the record what the intent is regarding the student regent selection of serving, well, not the student regent, the RCAC committee and the students that will be serving on that, and what the intent is if they have a substitute. So could you just mention that so we have it for the record? Representative Cleburne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We're in the same room, so if you can mute, thank you. What I would like to say is I was concerned that it doesn't state clearly what the term of the students, the term of the students' participation. It just kind of leaves that open, and so I want to make sure that we are clear as we're writing the bill going forward how long that servant, member would serve on the commission. And then I did have a question. I'm just a little bit confused. When we were just talking, Mr. Nathan, I did have a question that popped up. And now with that other question, I just lost it in my mind. I'll have to come back to that. But I just want to make sure we define the term of that student. And then also when it says the student president or designee, I want to make sure that we're talking about a student designee as opposed to some other type of designee.
Mr. Hopkins.
Madam Chair, Representative Cleburne. So the current statute states that section 15.057 governs the advisory council. Section 15.0575 deals with administrative boards and agencies. It sets a default term limit for all members of boards and agencies at 4 years. So that would apply where the 6-year term does not apply in this body. Presidents, their terms are going to be shorter than 4 years even. So you'll see turnover even shorter than a 4-year term for those student body presidents because the section states that the student body president or a designee thereof is the member of RCAC. The sitting student body president would become the member or their designee. It's not clear what the term of a designee of a student body president would be. And it's also not specified that the designee must also be a student.
Okay. Yeah, Representative Cleburne.
Thank you. And then I would just like to go back to the previous topic that we were discussing about the cities of 100,000 or more. My concern is that the cities of the first class, that would also include Duluth, which is less than 100,000, but I don't know if we specifically wanted to exclude a city of the first class, Duluth. That's just a question of clarification.
Mr. Hopkins, or Ms. White, can you comment on that?
Madam Chair and Representative, this amendment came as a result of concerns from Minneapolis and St. Paul. And so the amendment is tailored to capture those cities in addition to Rochester, which are the cities with the population over the amount in the amendment. I don't think Duluth expressed any concerns about it. At least that's not what I heard from the person who provided the amendment to me. It was just Minneapolis and St. Paul. So we're carving out an exception for them to require that any healthcare facility bonding be approved by resolution by the city council.
Representative Cleburne, do you have a follow-up?
No, I'm just a little bit concerned because other places in statute, when we talk about Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Rochester, we often talk about them as the cities of the first class. And I just want to make sure that we're not setting a space for us to have trouble at a later date. So thank you.
Okay, I have and Senator Rarick, are you commenting? I want you to talk now too, but I will comment about the student position and we can go back to that, but I wanted you to go first. So Senator Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Cleburne, you're bringing up some of the concerns that I had as we talked about this last night. I was kind of wondering if when we struck that 2-year term on the student on there, were we inadvertently creating the 6-year term, but as we discussed it within our group, we realized that it's by naming them as the president of each campus, as that person leaves and a new one comes in, it is the new one who would then take over and or they would get to appoint the new person. So there, I think we came to the conclusion that there's really no term for that person. It is going to be a continually revolving position, so we kind of felt comfortable not having a term defined.
Thank you, I should say Chair Rarick. And it seems to me, and I wanted to throw this back to Chair Rarick, it seems to me having an appointed student designee seems like it might be a friendly amendment if we could add in this meeting. I don't know how you feel about that. We don't need to do that, but I just was wondering if we wanted to add, if you were, what you thought about that.
I guess I'm open to that. I know one of the other concerns we brought on that, especially for the four other campuses, is if they're doing this, which commonly they would be during school, are they going to be able, I know now with a Zoom and remote nature, they are probably far more capable of being involved. But I am definitely open to that. I think it is good, and the whole point of trying to bring the students in is to get that input. And so I guess I am very open that the designee would also be a student.
Okay, so Mr. Hopkins or Ms. White, would you be able to put a on the fly a verbal amendment that we could vote on?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Mr. Hopkins.
Yes, so I think there could be two potential ones, I think, that would address some of the concerns that have just been raised. The first would be inserting current at line 28.1, inserting current before student body president so that it would read the current student body president of each of the five campuses. And then the second change would be or student designees thereof. So inserting student before designees at 28.2. I'd be happy to separate those out if the committee wants to consider one or the other or both, however you want to proceed.
And Mr. Hopkins, I just have a question. Did you say a student's, it would be clear that the student would have, the president would have to, it would be a student, student designee. So you're just putting it in front of designee. I see Senator Claussen has his hand up. Senator Claussen, is it to this matter?
I have two matters, but just to this one, I've served on the RCAT, and I know there's a lot of work involved in vetting and recruiting candidates and so on. I'm just wondering, the student body president, how long do they serve? I mean, if this is just a one-year position, I don't think that's necessarily a good fit, because I think a person needs to grow into that position, understand what the role of the RCAT is. And so I just wanted to clarify at our various University of Minnesota institutions, as a student body president elected for 1 year, that means they would serve 1 year only on the RCAT?
I will let Mr. Hopkins comment on how this reads now and how it would be if these changes were made. Mr. Hopkins.
Madam Chair, Representative Claussen, I do not know what the term for the student body president at any of the five University of Minnesota campuses is. I don't know if someone from the University of Minnesota is on the call that might be able to address that question for the committee.
Let's see, is there anyone on the call from the University of Minnesota? If you do, raise your hand. And I'm just gonna call on Ms. Oliver from Office of Higher Education. She works with a lot of universities and their student bodies. She perhaps might know how long these people serve.
Hi, Madam Chair, committee members. For the record, my name is Nikki Oliver. I am the Director of Grants and Government Relations for the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. Hold on, I hope you can hear me. Okay, so the Student Senate is who serves on the Student Advisory Council for the University of Minnesota, the Student Senate President. They are elected every year, is my understanding. So. It's an annual position, and they're elected by their student body.
Madam Chair,
Rarick.
Yeah, thank you. I just got confirmation from Regent Farnsworth that is correct. The student body president is elected each year. They could serve more than one, but it is elected each year.
Senator Claussen, do you have a follow-up?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'd just be concerned it would be like a revolving door, a new person every year coming into that position. I don't think that's fair to that position or fair to RCAT in that situation. Somehow, I think we need to look at that.
Okay, Representative Cleburne.
Sorry, I'm working from my iPad, so getting to mute and unmute is a little slower for me. Well, I can appreciate Senator Clausen's concern here about revolving, but I just want to say, as a legislator coming in my first term in 2019, I too was new to this process of regent selection. I think the students who are elected student body president are students who are very savvy. They understand what's happening. And while I can appreciate the concern about the position itself, do we want students or not students, which is a different question in my mind, I believe that they would have the capacity, the student body presidents of each of our institutions, to jump in and do the work that needs to be done. But I do understand the concern of, is this the space where students would be the best participants or not? I hear that question as well. So thank you.
And I see that Mr. Hopkins has his hand up. So do you have clarifying or information to share with us?
Madam Chair, Nathan Hopkins from House Research. I just wanted to point out for the committee that the use of designees could be used to provide more continuity for the RCAC. Under section 15.0575, those designees would be subject to four-year term limits. So the designees could provide some more continuity if this was burdensome to either the individual student body president or a problem for the RCAC as a body.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. Senator Clausen.
Well, Madam Chair, I have another question, but I know that.
Okay, so is it regarding this? Otherwise,
I can comment on this because sitting on the RCAT, what generally happens is it's many times a graduate student, and they're, after 1 year, all of a sudden they're no longer a student, but they're still serving. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I serve on that too. I'm not familiar with that situation, but thank you for sharing that situation. So we're back to Representative Cleburne. Did you have another comment, or is your hand is still up? Okay, and then so Chair Rarick, did you want to add current? Want to move forward with the current student and then the student designee?
Yeah, Madam Chair, if you would like me to make the motion for this oral amendment, I would make that motion.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Rarick. And Mr. Hopkins, can you just say again what it would be, and then we'll take a vote? Go ahead. Mr. Herring.
Because we haven't actually moved the conference report or the DE in front of us, I think we'll just have to wait until we move the DE amendment and then come back and Senator Rarick can make the oral amendment, and we can have Mr. Hopkins describe the oral amendment and then take the vote. I just want to make sure we get
the excellent. So we'll get through the walkthrough first and then we will get to that. So Senator Clausen, I believe you have additional question regarding our walkthrough.
I did. Again, relating to Section 18, which is the Regent and Candidate Advisory Council. And as I mentioned before, there are some subgroups in that group about recruiting people, and there's responsibilities of the RCAC. I believe the responsibilities of the RCAC are laid out in rules. And I'm just wondering, are there any changes that have to be made in rules related to the changes that are being made here to the RCAC?
Okay, Mr. Hopkins, who is definitely a regents guru here at the Capitol. Do you have an answer for that?
Madam Chair, members, I'm not sure exactly what, if any, rules of the Regent Candidate Advisory Council would have to be amended in order to address any changes in the statute here, but the statute is controlling. And if there were any conflict, the rules and procedures of the council, which it adopts for itself, would have to be changed to conform to that.
Okay. So, Senator Klassen, do you have a follow-up?
No, I just wanted to point that out, and I appreciate the response.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so member, are there any further questions? I do not see any. So the only item on our agenda is House File 3827. We will move the DE amendment and then take up all the amendments to the DE. We then will vote on the DE amendment. And finally, we will close with final discussion and vote on the conference report. So I will move the conference committee report on House File 3872. Senator Rarick, will you move the DE amendment to the conference report?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. We have before us the DE amendment. We have a pair of amendments to the DE. The first amendment is labeled A13. Senator Rarick, will you move the A13th amendment and will you move it right now?
Yes, Madam Chair, I will move the A13 amendment.
Okay, Senator Rarick, can you briefly tell us what the amendment does?
All right, make sure I'm getting the right one here. I believe this is in regards to a concern that was brought up in regards to the potential increase in the Pell Grants that are coming. And we were wanting to make sure that the relationship between the Pell Grants and the state grants, that the way things operate, that it, with an increase in the Pell Grants, this language allows the Department of Higher Education to make changes so that the student actually sees the benefits of the increase in the Pell Grants instead of having the Pell Grant rise and in return the state grant drops. So this is language that will help OHE make that change for this fall semester, basically, before we would be back in session to address any changes that might come up in regards to the federal Pell Grants.
Okay, thank you, Senator Rarick. Chair Rarick. And is there any discussion regarding this A13 amendment? Representative Cleavorn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm just wondering if OHE could maybe speak to this and kind of help me understand exactly what the outcome of this would be for us.
Ms. Oliver.
I believe Commissioner Olson is also prepared to speak.
Do you want me to speak? I can speak too. You want the commissioner, it's fine.
Ms. I do not see, okay. The other, okay, so I, Representative Cleavorn, I'll have you make that call. Would you like Commissioner Olson or Ms. Oliver? You get a choice today. Okay, Commissioner Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Dennis Olson, Commissioner with the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. And if I miss part of the mark here, we may end up hearing from Ms. Oliver anyway. But we do currently have the authority in statute to adjust the living and miscellaneous expense parameter of the state grant formula. In year two of a biennium, if there is a projected spending balance, what this amendment does is give us temporary authority to consider the ASR, the assigned student responsibility parameter of the formula, as an additional way to adjust and account for any spending balance that the state grant may have in the second year, which will be fiscal 23. We view this as friendly. If I can use legislative language, this is friendly, and You know, of course, the federal Pell Grant change, the increase of $400, does not take effect until July 1 of 22, so the first day of fiscal 23. So at that time, we will be reconciling both our projections and our cash flow and have a better idea of the impacts of fiscal 22 enrollment changes, any additional income parameter changes, and of course, tuition increases that are proposed. Once all that's reconciled, we then now have the authority to consider ASR as an additional parameter to adjust.
Representative Cleburne, do you have a follow-up? Okay, thank you very much. Let's see, is there any further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, Senator Rarick, will you renew your motion to adopt the A13 amendment?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
I'm going to oppose it just because I don't fully understand it, but I believe there's the majority to pass it. So.
The motion passes and the A13th amendment is adopted. Okay, now we are going to, we have an amendment to the DE amendment that is labeled A16. Senator Rarick, will you move the A16 amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move the A16 amendment.
Senator Rarick, can you briefly tell us what this amendment does?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. There's the one provision that we have in the bill, and it was the piece that Ms. Grunewald kind of referred to when she was going through the spreadsheet. It is the $800,000 for the allied health piece. And as we looked at that and we got some advice from others, we were looking to put that to MnState instead of OHE because it's a pretty small amount in comparison to what the original ask was. That then raised a number of concerns about there are institutions other than those in MnState that offer programs like this. So should MnState operate that? And some questions around creating a new piece. So we in the end felt it was not appropriate to go there. So what this is doing is it is putting that $800,000 into the workforce development scholarships, but it is creating some language to identify it as specific to this piece, the allied health piece. Now OHE will be able to administer that through the workforce development scholarships, but directly dedicated to these specific four categories.
Okay, thank you very much for explaining that. Are there any questions? Okay, I see Representative O'Neill. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So it looks like 200,000 of the 800,000 will go for administration. That just seems like a very high number. It's a big percentage. And I'm wondering if OHE, is it OHE that's administrating it? Okay, so if OHE could speak to the need for up to 200,000. It just seems like a lot when you're only doing 800.
Okay, Commissioner Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to clarify, I did see Ms. Grunewald's camera pop on. Maybe better to answer this. This is not an OHE program. This is at Minnesota State. And my understanding, the amendment is the $200,000 is available to administer the entire workforce development scholarship portion. So it's not of the 800,000. It's of the entire $4+ million workforce development scholarships, which adds the three new eligible categories.
Thank you very much. Representative O'Neill.
Right. So, okay. So that makes a lot more sense. So it's the 5 million, I believe it said, for workforce development, and it's 200,000 of 5 million. That's a big difference. So thank you for the clarification.
Okay. Representative Cleburne, did you have a question? Okay. Are there any other questions? So I just want to clarify, it was my understanding that this is now going to be a Minnesota State administered program. under the workforce development grant funding. Okay. And is there any?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair Rarick. I have another. I have one more question. Does this also have dollars for the Minnesota State to be able to promote the program to be able to track students?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And yes, I did. I'm sorry, I did misspeak on that. This is still under Minn State. This is just putting it into one of their other funds to be able to work it around. And to Representative O'Neill, the only up to 24,000 of that 800,000 is available for administration. So that is the difference there. And I'm sorry, Madam Chair, what was the other part?
Thanks, Chair Rarick. I was just wondering, these programs are the most successful when they're able to market and do that. Are there resources to do that in this?
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. I do not believe this gives any portion of that for marketing it, but maybe if someone from Minn State is on or Ms. Oliver, I do believe that they do have other, through their marketing, they will be able to do that in along with their other marketing was the idea.
Is there anyone on the call from Minnesota State? Okay, I don't see anyone. And Ms. Oliver, are you able to help out in that response by chance?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Rarick. So I can't speak for Minn State, but given how they advertise, since it's part of the Workforce Development Scholarships now, my assumption is they would just add language to emphasize this particular program to their already existing kind of advertisement and marketing. And they could potentially also utilize the administration funding for marketing possibly as well. But like I said, I'm not Minn State, so you might have to get clarification from them, but that's my guess.
Okay. And then Senator Rarick, did you work with Minnesota State just to make sure that the administrative costs were what they needed and asked them both question about marketing at all? Did you discuss that?
Madam Chair, I believe both of our CAs were in conversations with the Minn State folks during the day to get this into the form it's in.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Okay. Go ahead, Senator Jasinski.
I just talked with Minsky and Bernie Oman, and the $200,000 is for marketing. That was part of one of my bills. So the $200,000 is for the marketing of this program.
Okay.
That's the part of the the administrative cost is for the marketing of the program.
Okay. I don't know. Is that, let's see. I'm wondering if someone just can clarify.
Madam Chair.
I just want to clarify this. When I say Chair Rarick, I was referring to chair of you being in another committee chair as in the Senate. So I'm just going to refer to you as Senator Rarick because I do know that our chair is Chair Tomasoni, and I don't want to do any disrespect for him. So I just want to let everyone know my intent was because you're a chair of another committee. And so sometimes I catch that. So we will call you Senator Rarick right now. So
very good.
Thanks. Did you want to make a comment?
Yeah. So I think further clarification on that. So that was the part that was brought up. The $200,000 is for the overall from the $5.05 million that they can use towards administration. And it was as Ms. Oliver was kind of saying, that's the part that they use for advertising and promoting the whole program. And this, the allied health piece was added into that program. So it will now be a part of all of their other advertisings for everything that's within that whole program.
Oh, very helpful. Thank you very much. Mr. Hopkins.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I think what Senator Rarick just said was exactly right. And I'm currently looking at the 2021 legislative report that Minn State filed on the Workforce Development Scholarship. And on page 4, it talks about how the scholarships were widely promoted throughout the year on every college campus utilizing market materials from both the system office and self-generated campus materials and strategies. They had a two-month paid media campaign to promote the scholarships that included digital advertising, radio advertising, and a homepage carousel ad on the minstate.edu website. So there is already a lot of marketing that's built into the workforce development program. And what this amendment does is nest the allied health technician scholarships into that workforce development scholarship program.
Excellent. Sounds like good government. Okay, so thank you, Chair Rarick. Is there any further discussion to this? Okay, seeing no further discussion, Senator Rarick, will you renew your motion to adopt the A16 amendment?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion passes and the A16 amendment is adopted. Okay, so we were just going to make the change to the verb. Chair Rarick was going to make a verbal amendment for adding the word current and student in an amendment. So, Mr. Hopkins, can you please state those?
Madam Chair and committee members, the oral amendment would be page 28, line 1, the DE, before student. Insert current, and page 28, line 2 of the DE, before designees. Sorry, that was page 28, line 1 of the DE, before student, insert current, page 28, line 2 of the DE, before designees, insert student.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, Ms. White.
Madam Chair, just to clarify, I think it's page 28, line 4, before designee, insert student. Two, in addition.
Madam Chair, so designees does appear twice here. To make everything totally clear, in addition, page 28, line 4, before designee, insert student.
Okay. So Senator Rarick, would you like to move that motion?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I will move the oral amendment as stated by Mr. Hopkins.
Thank you very much. Any discussion? Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion passes and the oral amendment is adopted. Members, seeing that there's no further amendments to the DE amendment, we will vote on the DE amendment as amended. This is not the final vote on the bill. All those in favor of adopting the DE amendment as amended, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment as amended is adopted. The conference committee report to House File 3872 as amended is before us. Members, is there any discussion?
Madam Chair and committee members, thank you for your hard work. Thanks, Senator Rarick, for pinch-hitting for me and your diligence. Thanks to Chairman Nardi and House and Senate conferees. It has been a pleasure. And with that, I will move the conference committee report as amended.
Thank you, Chair Tomasoni. It's great to hear you, and so appreciate that. And I just want to make sure our members, are there any closing comments before we move to Chair Tomasoni's motion to adopt the conference report on House File 3872 as amended? Chair Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first, I want to start by, you know, thanking Senator Tomasoni for all the latitude he has given me, and it has been my absolute honor to assist him in this. And Chair Bernardi, I want to thank you for all the work, our work these last few days. It has been an absolute pleasure. And I'm not going to try to remember everyone's name, but, you know, our staff has been on both sides have been absolutely wonderful, working through this and staying late as needed. So, you know, I think in the end, we have a bill that we can bring forward that kind of supports our students. And again, just want to thank everyone for getting through this process. And
thank you very much, Chair Rarick. And I too want to add my great thanks to Senator David Tomasoni. Knowing him since 2001, and he is such an amazing person and someone that everyone gets to know, totally grows to love him. And so it's been an honor to be a partner in this work in our Higher Education Committee. And I cannot thank you enough for all you've done for the students of the state and for your length of service, what you have done across Minnesota from the north to the south and the east to the west. And your leadership will be sorely missed. And I am very honored to have served with you. So thank you so much. And Senator Rarick, thank you for the congenial work on our conference committee. We got through it. And I think we have, with the budget we got, we have an excellent bill. And I will, I'll continue my comments. I see there's other hands up. But I'll say my comments at the end. So I will do Senator Jasinski. I see your hands up. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi, and all members. I want to thank everybody as well, and especially Senator David Tomasoni, who's been a mentor to me throughout this time on the Higher Ed Committee. Thanks for including a couple of important bills to me, the OTAN to Learn to Earn, as well as the Public Safety Workforce Grant. So thanks to everybody, and especially to my best friend, David Tomasoni. You did a great job, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Cleavorn.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi. And I think I would be remiss if I didn't say thank you to you. You've been a fabulous mentor to me in the House of Representatives and as the Chair of Higher Education. And I want to thank you for always having an inclusive mindset and for looking after the students who are sometimes overlooked. And I really appreciate you always putting the students' voices first and foremost in our work. So I want to say thank you for that, for our doing your very best, even though we have limited resources this year, to keep our systems, our public systems and our private systems viable so that our students have many, many choices. And you know I'm a strong advocate for our public systems. And I know that I would be not truthful if I didn't say that I wasn't disappointed that we didn't have more of the more dollars to give to our institutions this year. But I do appreciate your commitment and the good work that you do in the House of Representatives and the work that you did in our conference committee to make sure that each and every one of us was consulted and spoken to about what was happening all along the way. So I appreciate that. And you're a great legislator, and I will miss you. So thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Cleveland. It's been an honor to serve with you as well. Are there any other closing comments before I do mine? Okay. Well, I want to start with by I know two people on here that I want to especially recognize, and that is Senator Clausen and Vice Chair Christensen. They will be retiring after this year, and I really want to thank them for their service and their passion to education and to our state. And I would love for them to, if they want it, well, they, you know, if you want, after I talk, want to make any comments, please, please do so. But I do want to recognize you. And it's been a pleasure to serve with you. And I want to thank our staff, and they are amazing. And I'm so glad that we didn't have to stay up together during the night around a table. And we were able to get our work done together, and that in a fairly quickly manner. I wish we would have had more funds in our target. We don't get to choose that as a committee. And if I did, it would have had a lot more money in it. I believe that investments in higher education help students, and our students need all the help we can get them to keep their tuition costs down and to not have a mountain of debt when they graduate. And so I hope that the work that we have been doing and the investments that we have been making continue to be strongly made in future sessions. And so with the bill that we put together, I'm very proud of the bill we put together. It's student-centered, and we have amazing focus on helping to support our students, our tribal colleges, and helping our students there be successful. Our parents that are going in college, they, especially during COVID, it really brought out the special needs of parents and helped them to be successful. And the inclusive higher education provisions that are amazing that Representative Cleburne did as well to bring to our state. Every student should have the opportunity to succeed, and having those supports for them will be great. So those are just some of the things I wanted to highlight, and thank each one of our conferees for the time that they've put into this. It takes a lot of time and dedication, and it has been an honor of my life to serve as the chair of higher education. And I'm just so proud of all your work. And I do want to give a shout out to all the testifiers this year and all the people that help make our education system strong, from our faculty to the workers at our colleges to the student body and to all the leaders in our school and the students who like really push themselves to challenge themselves and succeed. We are rooting for you, and we want to do all we can to help you succeed. You are our future, and you make such a difference in our state, not only in the future, but you're making such a difference now. So I want to wish everyone the best in their studies, and thank you for the honor to have served with all of you and to been a part of this partnership and opening doors for Minnesota students and making Minnesota strong. So thank you all so very, very much. Members, is there anyone else that would like to make a closing comment? Okay, and before, so we will see no further discussion, I will renew my motion to adopt the conference report on House File 3872 as amended. That we also heard that from Chair Tomasoni, so I would like to renew that. The CLA will take the role, starting with the Senate.
Chair Tomasoni.
Tomasoni votes yes.
Tomasoni, aye. Senator Clausen.
Aye.
Clausen, aye. Senator Housley.
Aye.
Housley, aye. Senator Jasinski.
Jasinski votes aye.
Jasinski, aye. Senator Rarick.
Aye.
Rarick, aye. Chair Bernardi.
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Christensen.
Aye.
Christensen, aye. Representative Keeler.
Keeler, aye.
Keeler, aye. Representative Cleburne.
Cleburne, aye.
Cleburne, aye. Representative O'Neill.
O'Neill, no.
O'Neill, nay. Madam Chair, that is 5 ayes and 0 nays from the Senate, and 4 ayes and 1 nay from the House.
Okay. There being 8 ayes and 2 nays. 4 Could you please repeat that? I want to make sure that I get it right.
No problem. There are 5 ayes from the Senate and 0 nays, and there are 4 ayes from the House and 1 nay.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Parmacher. I was adding them together. So there being 5 ayes and 0 nays among the Senate conferees and 4 ayes and 1 nay among the House conferees, the motion prevails and the conference committee report on House File 3872 as amended is adopted. Nonpartisan staff is directed to make technical corrections if needed. Members, please watch for your email from the reviser to approve the conference committee report electronically by replying to the email. Chair, Senator Rarick, do you have any closing remarks before we wrap up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will just mistake that was made with the Unemployment Insurance Conference Committee. I would just like to, for members, there were some folks who sent in their electronic signature. That is not it. As Chair Bernardi stated, we will get an email. We need to reply to that email. You just type in your name, your district number. That becomes your electronic signature, just so we get it right. So our 12-hour window is not delayed before it can be taken up.
Hey, thank you very much. I expect, I'm anticipating, I have not got confirmation that our bill will be up tomorrow in the House. That's what my prediction is. And with that, seeing that there's no further discussion, thanks again, everyone, and best wishes to you. And thank you very much. Our meeting is adjourned.